And it's Steve Tasker who has been all over the field.
Kind of unique. He was kind of a dual role player for you.
Steve.
A balloon.
Steve. A blimp. We're not even in the stratosphere of normalcy.
I'm in Palm Beach right now. Yeah.
Hey,
with the 23rd pick in the 2022 NFL Draft, the Buffalo Bills select Kaiir Elam, defensive back, Florida.
All right, gentlemen, start your engines.
Yeah, and
ladies,
if those videos about a kid sitting there with his family surrounded by getting a call from an NFL team, and in that moment his whole every childhood dream comes true by getting drafted, it brings tears to my eyes every time.
It never.
If you don't do that, if you
gets
don't,
old.
If that gets old to you, if that's trite to you or whatever, you got no soul. Because
yeah.
That is absolutely. It is must watch. I'll watch all of even the other teams' kids. You got to watch them. It is just absolutely the best.
Two things that never get old: watching kids get drafted in front with their families all around them, friends, everybody that played a part in their upbringing. That's number one. That's probably number two. Number one: military people coming home to their families as a surprise.
That's another.
That's number one.
That's another good one.
That's number one.
That's
kids
right.
getting drafted, number two.
Yeah, that's
those never get old.
They never get old ever, and it doesn't even matter if it's your team. Like this Kaiir Elam video is, I tear.
You can't even talk.
I tear up every time I watch it. It's just the most awesome thing. You think last year, the one I remember from last year, is Spencer Brown. He's in the garage with all the whole neighborhood.
Yeah,
right. I mean, come on.
Power cable spool is the table.
Right. He has to duck under the garage door railing when it opens,
He jumps through a table an hour later. It's
unbelievable.
In the backyard.
It's the best ever. And so it's just that to me is just something uniquely American. Uniquely American. And it's just awesome. I mean, even Bills fans can appreciate some kid getting drafted by the Jets or anybody else. Seahawks, because it's just somehow, some way we can all interject ourselves into it. And I told you the story of me. I was in a dark room in college by myself.
I feel bad for you. I genuinely feel bad for you that you're cooped up in your own dorm room.
It was
sitting by the phone.
It was one of the great moments of my life. Are you kidding me? It was
no,
awesome.
I know that. It's just a shame you couldn't share it with your family, Your brothers and, your parents.
You know what,
and,
though? You never know. It wasn't going to happen to me, right? So, I had a lot more moments better than that one later on, but it was still it was still the absolute best. So these videos that are on splattered all over social media from every team, you can go out and find them. It is absolutely one of the greatest. It's the best part of the NFL draft, the absolute best part.
No question about it.
I mean, did you watch? You watched the draft, right? We all watched the draft. Okay.
Yeah, I was here.
So
I was working.
You get the camera shot from ESPN, the NFL Network, and it's got just a sea of humanity. I mean, it's unbelievable in Vegas, right? I mean, they really did. I mean, there's 100,000 people down there, right? And I'm sitting there three picks into the draft, and they show the crowd shot, and I'm going, man, oh, man. Every one of those people right now is thinking, man, I wish I was somewhere else. It's like 900 degrees down there.
Was it that warm?
Oh, my gosh.
I thought it was super windy.
Oh. They're all standing there. Only one of the guys that have been picked in the top three are even there. That Aiden Hutchinson, he comes out. The other two guys are someplace else.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking, oh, man, this is not that good.
So, ladies and gentlemen, start your engines for day two of the NFL draft. As we saw a lot go down on night one.
Nine trades. Is that a record? I didn't hear.
No, it is not a record. I have it here. Hold on. Nine trades is, let me see, hold on. Where the heck is it?
That's draft day trades.
It's the first time that six wide receivers were drafted in the top 20 ever, right. Common draft era. Steve, since the 2020 NFL draft, there have now been 17 wide receivers taken in round one since 2020. In the So think about this. Six wide receivers drafted in the top 20, two wide receivers traded and acquired.
Yeah, that's right.
If you don't, if you're going to tell me that wide receivers have not taken over the National Football League,
yeah.
I don't believe you.
Listen to this. So here's what July 25th, 2020. So, you know, almost 2 years ago. Almost 2 years ago it began. Seattle traded the number 10 pick to the New York Jets. January 30th, 2021, the Rams trade number 32 to Detroit. February of 2021, Indianapolis trades number 16 to Philly. Then later, San Francisco trades 29 to Miami. Miami trades number 15 to Philadelphia. Chicago trades number 7 to the New York Giants. Denver trades number 9 to Seattle. Las Vegas trades number 22 to Green Bay. Cleveland trades number 13 to Houston. Miami trades number 29 to Kansas City. Philadelphia trades number 16 and number 19 for number 18.
Yeah, with New Orleans.
With New Orleans. Washington trades number 11 to New Orleans for 16. Minnesota trades number 12 to Detroit for 32. Houston trades number 13 to Philly. For number 15.
Now you're into draft night now.
Yeah, now we're into draft night. And then Arizona trades 23 basically, to Baltimore. Listen to that. On draft night, Arizona trades number 23 to Baltimore. Baltimore trades it to Buffalo for number 25. I mean, this goes on and on.
Yeah, so Steve, essentially what happened last night, trades were made at 11, 12, and 13. And two of them were for receivers.
That's right. And the third one, wasn't the third one traded?
Jordan Davis.
Huh?
Third one was for Jordan Davis.
Right, and didn't they trade a receiver to get him, though, or something like that?
That was Philly's trade with Houston. And then after
That's right.
Philly got A.J. Brown and gave pick 18 to Tennessee.
That's right. Oh, my gosh.
And A.J. Brown had a four-year, $100 million contract 10 minutes later.
You think there was a phone call before the
draft? Well, unbeknownst to us and everybody else out there, A.J. Brown basically had been talking with the Titans, and he was very public about it. He actually talked to, I want to say, the Tennessean, the paper down there, in a story that's out today. And he essentially said, I tried to negotiate with the Titans. The best offer they were willing to give me was $19 million a year with incentives that could push it to 20. That's not going to get it done for a number one wideout in this league anymore.
Not for him.
$20 million 4 months ago would have got it done. Mm-hmm. But then the first guy to sign before free agency was Mike Williams. 3 years, $60 million to re-sign with the Chargers. $20 million a year. We thought, wow, where's the market going?
Right.
Then Tyreek Hill gets traded, signs a deal for $30 million a year, and the wide receiver market gets turned on its ear. The Bills have to sign Diggs to an extension at about 24 average annual value, and then we saw other people move. Devontae Adams getting 25 a year. I mean, it's just, it went cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs, the wide receiver market. So now every other receiver who's in the last year of their deal, it's like, hey, they're putting their hand out. Where's mine?
Oh, yeah.
Where's mine?
Yeah.
And the Titans did not want to step up. They said, we're not paying that.
Okay.
So they trade him, and then they turn around and draft Treylon Burks.
Who is exactly like A.J. Brown.
Yeah.
That's
not as fast, but yes.
But who knows? But that's what you're looking at now, because here's the thing. Yes, wide receivers are really expensive and really valuable, and these guys like A.J. Brown and Tyreek Hill have proven, and Mike Evans, and you go down the list, have proven to be extremely productive and really good. The Titans ostensibly got rid of a guy that's making, what's he making, $25 million
a year
for a guy that's going to be making $3.5 million. And he's hopefully, with all due respect, could probably be just as good as A.J. Brown.
Well, they don't throw it enough.
Right.
If you're the Titans and you still have Derrick Henry, you can't – I understand why they didn't want to pay a receiver $25 million a year. Right. They don't throw the ball enough.
My question is this. Is the market going to self-correct? Because teams will say, listen,
No.
I'm going to draft like this kid, the kid Jefferson in Minnesota. I'm going to trade Stephon Diggs and get Jefferson in Minnesota, which he was a great had a
that
great
was
kid.
For a different circumstance. It wasn't for money.
The point is though, you can get another guy just like it.
Yes, but I disagree. The market will not self-correct for two reasons. Number one, there are always going to be A-list receivers in this league that teams are going to be willing to pay that kind of money. Mm-hmm. And number two, the salary cap's going to keep going up, allowing people to pay crazy money for wide receivers. And then what you're going to have in the grand scheme of this league is you're going to have about 10 or 12 guys making $32 million a year a wide receiver. Everybody else is going to be on rookie contracts. There will be no middle market for wide receivers or a very limited middle market
for
wide receivers.
Well, here's the thing. It might be that every team – it's like the old days. Every team has one guy making 30 – it's like 32 guys making $30 million, and then everybody else is going to be a rookie contract or a guy.
I just worry that it's going to get to a point where it's not going to be sustainable for an NFL club to have a franchise quarterback and a franchise wide receiver on second contracts. Because here's where we're going, Steve. Think about the Bills. Next year, Josh Allen's average – contract value goes up into the 40s. Mm-hmm. He's like $43 million next year. Mm-hmm. Stephon Diggs is making 24. I mean, that's $67 million on your cap for two guys.
Mm-hmm.
That's not sustainable. There's going to be teams that just flat out can't do that.
Yeah.
Based on where they have some of their other money.
You're going to have to fit it in somehow, some way. And here's what's going to happen. You're going to have position groups like, I'll tell you where it's going to happen. Defensive players, they're going to struggle to be.
The only people you're paying are corners and ends.
That's exactly right. Corners and pass rushers.
Corners, ends, tackles, receivers, quarterbacks. Those are the only people that are going to make money anymore.
Right. It's going to be like
big time money.
Right. It's going to be like pitchers in the Major League Baseball.
But I'm telling you right now, wide receiver, and we talked to Brandon. I asked Brandon Bean this question on Tuesday when we had him here in studio. Wide receiver, in terms of its importance on an NFL roster, is closing the gap on quarterbacks and pass rushers. Yeah, it is unquestionably third on the position priority list, unquestionably third. And in terms of average annual salary, it may eclipse pass rusher.
I think it's going to eclipse pass rusher. I mean, Tyreek's contract already does that.
Yeah.
So I don't know that anybody else is going to chase Tyreek because you're just getting too much production from finger quote others. You know what I'm saying? Even the Bills with Steph Diggs, I mean, Cole Beasley, Gabe Davis, I mean, those guys are indispensable. You can't run your offense without them. Would your offense be significantly hindered by like losing a guy like Steph Diggs when the draft, like last night, instead of getting Kair Elam, The Bills get a guy like Pickens, George Pickens, who's got all the tools and all that stuff going on. A little different receiver, but still one of those guys, right? So that's the problem is maybe that the best wide receivers in the league may still command that, but because of the glut of supply, maybe it will keep a lid on it.
Well, I think what's going to happen is this. The teams that have an all-world number one wideout, they'll keep that guy for the length of whatever the term of the contract is, and they'll just keep cycling rookie receivers
underneath
through.
Maybe.
You know, because they'll say, well, this guy's having a great year three. We got our number one receiver, though, for another 4 years. Right. We're not going to be able to give that guy a second contract based on his production. So let's draft one now, get him in the pipeline, and we'll let him go and cycle the next guy up and through.
Right, and it'll be a question of how teams can work that. They're going to have guys, as always, because this will never change. The teams that will be really good or have guys that bust out or have unexpected production will be the guys that can outperform their contract.
Yeah,
it's hard for a guy like Tyreek Hill to outperform that contract.
It's going to be very hard.
But Gabe Davis already has.
Right. But what's the Bills' decision in 2 years?
Right.
Are you keeping Stephon Diggs at age 31 on a fat contract?
Right.
Or are you going to pay Gabriel Davis? Because there's a very good chance you're not going to be able to do both.
Right. But you also have two drafts between now and then.
Yes. So start bringing them through the pipeline to make that decision easier.
Perfect segue. We're going to draft somebody today.
Oh, you think so? Wide receiver?
Yeah.
Here is my concern with
that.
Here is my concern with that premise. Okay? And nobody knows how it's going to go tonight.
Yeah. Least of all.
Here is my concern with that, because I was trying to think about, you know, the positions that could be addressed here on day two. And I know a lot of people are in favor of the Bills taking a receiver at 57, if not at 89. Specifically with pick 57, logic would say, hey, six receivers were taken in round one and two other teams acquired veteran receivers. They don't need one now. So maybe some value falls to the Bills at the receiver position and they can get somebody. Here's the problem. Based on a number of top 100 boards that I've looked at and my feelings about who's left on the board, I would argue there are only about four, maybe five true second-round receivers. Now, I could be wrong. Some teams may like some more guys than that. But it's a four, maybe five receivers in round two tonight that fit value. Here's the issue. The Bills are picking 57, and teams ahead of them that will likely take a really hard look at wide receiver, Houston at 37, Baltimore at 45, Kansas City at 50, and Green Bay at 53. Those are four teams in front of the Bills that could very easily take a wide receiver. Not saying they will.
Now, here's the guys, too. Sky Moore, Western Michigan. George Pickens of Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
Jalen Tolbert, South Alabama. John Mechie at Alabama.
Did you say Christian Watson?
And Christian Watson.
Yeah.
At North Dakota State University, who Judy called in yesterday and was calling for.
That's right.
He's got a chance to be there. Although he's he's toolsy.
57?
Well, I just named five names, and you just had four teams.
Yeah.
That's the razor-thin thing you're looking at. Right.
And we're not counting trades up for somebody to go scoop somebody
right.
up, too.
Now, there are other guys.
Yeah, round three, you know, you got an Alec Pierce.
But you're looking
straight
at guys
line speed,
like, for instance,
4.41.
Yeah. Like you're thinking like this, too. A David Bell, hugely productive at Purdue.
Not
catches
fast.
Absolutely everything. Great route runner. But I think Brownie can outrun him. Right, so
I'm not slow.
Well, I didn't say he was. I'm just saying.
No, I said I'm not slow.
Right.
Yeah. I might have a chance.
Yeah, those are the kind of guys. That's what you're giving up. Now, if the Bills are in this on the second round, the 57, there are still guys out there that are more toolsy than guys like David Bell from Purdue, but Wandale Robinson, Kentucky. Like, wow, really fat. But he's
short.
He's like.
So here's the thing.
He's also shorter than Brownie. So.
Here's the thing. What is he? I don't know if he is.
I don't want to insult the guy.
Calvin Austin might be, but not Wandale Robinson.
Right, but that's what we're looking at.
Here's the thing. We have to ask ourselves, what do the Bills believe they need at wide receiver? And they don't need inside guys. You know, could they draft a slot receiver? Sure. You know, I realize Jamison Crowder's here on a one-year contract. Isaiah McKenzie's here on a two-year deal. But what they need is depth on the outside, because it's basically Stephon Diggs, Gabriel Davis. Hodgins is a slot guy. He played in the slot in Oregon State.
He's big enough.
I'm not saying he can't play outside.
Kumaro.
But you have Kumaro.
But
that's
even Kumaro, when Kumaro gets in the game, you know he's almost always in the slot. You know why?
Blocking.
Yeah, because he's not running a route.
So I think you have to make the argument here that speed is what you need at wide receiver. Much like you needed speed at corner, and they added that last night in the form of Kyir Elam, you need speed. You need a field stretcher.
Right. Okay.
You need a field stretcher, and it's going to be very interesting if and when they do draft a wide receiver, the makeup of that prospect and how well he fits what the Bills might be looking for at that position. There's some good value, I think, at the linebacker position tonight in round two. And you're talking about players like Chad Muma from Wyoming, Christian Harris from Alabama, Leo Chenal from Wisconsin, player I like a lot, Troy Anderson from Montana State. And then, you know, let's not forget this, Steve. There's still some cornerback value on the board.
Yeah.
Andrew Booth is still there.
McCreary's still there.
Kyler Gordon is still there. Roger McCreary is still there. And then Cam Taylor Britt, a safety corner hybrid from Nebraska, is still there. Player I like. Physical player.
Right.
So there's value to be had there, and we heard Brandon Bean say it last night. If there's a corner there and it's value, I wouldn't hesitate from taking one.
Yeah, exactly. And I've thought too, and you know, you kind of fall into that trap. Say, all right, we got a corner. We're finished. Not so fast.
Because last year's draft for evidence,
right? So we don't know what their draft board looks like. But if I was thinking about other positions, and I was writing this down, certainly wide receiver is where I start. And I've got like 12 guys here. Some of them, half of whom will probably be available in this, and when the Bills pick. Although I don't know what the Bills think of them, so I don't know if they like
what's their value.
Who cares?
Of those guys?
Yeah. So other spots, and this jumped out at me. I went down and looked at some different websites to see if they agreed. There's a couple of guys, and I know Bills fans, and some, and you can, because I'm just like everybody else. I'm spitballing here. But I think, you know what they could do is go after another big dude, either a center, guard, or defensive tackle. The three defensive tackles I'm looking at, one is Travis Jones of UConn.
Expected to go in round two.
Who is a giant. He's like 6'5 and a half, 330 pounds. He's one of those guys now, and he's tough to move. Now, he's not as athletic as Jordan Davis, but he's a big body. Also, Logan Hall is another one that I like. Now, he's not on the list here that we're looking at.
The reason why is people don't know exactly what he is. Because
right.
He's 6'6", 283. Is he an end?
6'6", 260 is what I was. I was looking at. Is what last I looked at. But he's a tall, lanky guy. But he plays.
I wonder if he's better for a 340.
He plays down inside. You know, he's listed as a defensive tackle. He plays a 3 technique.
I like that Perrion Winfrey kid. From Oklahoma, he's a defensive.
Fredarian Mathis from Alabama.
Winfrey had a nice week at the Senior Bowl. I believe he was defensive MVP of the Senior Bowl game.
So you've
really turned it on. He's like a 295-pound guy. He's got a weird body for a defensive tackle. He doesn't look like your normal defensive tackle. He's kind of got a longer trunk, but he's violent, man. I like him.
There's a ton of guys there, and then. You get over in the other position group, like the center/guard spot. The one that's really there that I'm kind of thinking about is Cam Jurgens from Nebraska.
Former tight end.
Right.
Who moved to center.
And he's
super athletic.
Yeah, super athletic, real fluid in his motion.
You want somebody out in front of a screen? This guy, go watch his tape. He's like 25 yards down the field.
Right, so he can scoot. Ryman from Central Michigan. I noticed, too, you get a lot of guys from the MAC that are really good offensive linemen. You know what I mean?
Raymond is the kid who he was born and raised in Austria. And so the general thought there is still learning with the techniques and such. But a player that's got a future in the league for sure. Nicholas Petit Frere is a kid whose family's from the Caribbean. And big, tall, long left tackle, played at Ohio State. I think he's a 2-year starter. Feet are good enough.
I'm thinking
long,
but I'm thinking the Bills are not. I don't think in the market for a tackle. I think it's guys like Cameron Jurgens. I think it's Sean
Ryan,
Dylan Parham.
Ryan's an interesting
Darian
player.
Darian Kennard, those kind
of
guys.
Ryan's an interesting player. He's one of those guys who's thick from the top of his head to through his ankles.
Right.
He's got like cankles.
Right.
But even though that's his body type, he can move. He actually played left tackle for them last year.
Right.
And has played all the way up and down the line, but he projects to guard because he's got shorter arms. I liked him a lot on tape.
I was thinking interior offensive line center guard because just out of a quality depth and, you know, you got Saffold on a 1-year deal.
Yep.
Bates just signed to a 2-year deal or 3-year deal. And you want to have a guy there that's at least being groomed for it. Morris will be 30.
He's 29 now.
He's 29. He'll be, I don't know, what 32 when he's done with his contract?
He just signed an extension.
Right. So whatever that is, he's going to be in his early 30s. But I don't know. That's me spitballing interior offensive line or defensive tackle other than wide receiver.
I saw some Bills fans tweeting about safety value and – you know, there are some safeties in round two that make sense. You know, Jalen Petrie from Baylor, nice player. Jaquan Brisker, who I like, good safety at Penn State. Those guys are expected to come off the board in round two. But here's the thing that I think people are forgetting. The Bills already have young safeties in the pipeline. Jaquan Johnson, who was a sixth-round pick a couple of years ago, and DeMar Hamlin, who was a sixth-round pick last year. I know for a fact the Bills' defensive staff likes DeMar Hamlin a lot.
Right.
So I don't know that the Bills need to go diving into the draft for safety depth. They have it already. Guys that have been in the system for a year or two. So I know people are worried about, you know, where this Jordan Poyer asking for more money thing is going to end up. But they've got guys in the pipeline. So I wouldn't be terribly worried or concerned that the Bills now have to go back in the draft and find more safety help. They have it on their roster already. And I didn't even mention Josh Thomas, the undrafted kid from App State from 2 years ago, who they also like a lot, who's been on the practice squad the last 2 years. Really good athlete. So they have guys here already on board that know the system.
They've got some depth already and depth with some high hopes attached to it.
So, yeah.
Yeah, safety is a possibility, but I don't think there's anybody in
not
this safety,
today.
Not on even on this second at this high in the draft that would step in and give them any more than what they're asking for from from the guys they've got on the roster.
I like your guard thoughts. I just think I don't know why I'm thinking round three for that.
That may be, and I say this. I think the value there's five guys at the top of this wide receiver class that are still on the board that to me are all more important than either Breece Hall or Kevin Walker the third.
Kenneth
Walker the third. Either one of those top running backs, I still think there are at least five wideouts on the board that are better than those guys.
It's just a matter of whether one of them is going to fall to you at
57. I don't know if any of those guys will. And then it starts to be a question mark for me as to whether there is another wide receiver who's better than the two running backs.
Here's the hope with that, okay? You only had one quarterback go off the board yesterday. Watch the race for quarterback talent here.
Yeah.
I think as many as four quarterbacks could go in round two tonight. That obviously will push things down the board. Teams to look at for that. Seattle has picks 40 and 41. Watch them make a move up for the quarterback they want tonight.
40 and 41.
That's where Seattle picks.
Yeah, they
watch them move up to the top of the board tonight to try to get the guy that they want.
They could go all the way up to either, right at the top. They could go to Jacksonville, Minnesota, or Tennessee right at the top of this.
Yep. Watch them make a move to try to get to the top of the board before the night starts so they because ensure they get the quarterback that they want.
They want to get ahead of probably Houston.
Maybe. I don't. Right? It's hard to tell what Houston's thinking.
Think Davis Mills is that?
I don't know. I feel like they want to give him another year, and I don't know that this year's class excites them enough. I think they go another year with Davis Mills.
When you're talking about this stuff, I mean, what other team? Well, Tennessee.
Carolina is the only other
Tennessee.
Team. Well, yeah, because after this year, Tannehill's contract gets stupid, and he's probably done. And now with A.J. Brown not there, you're probably very close to rebuilding mode.
Well, if you get a guy on board that can learn the system and start to get acclimated, then
I think Tennessee is a possibility, absolutely. Seattle.
They're the third pick of this draft.
So Seattle's got to get ahead of them.
Seattle's got to jump up to 34 Minnesota or 33 Jacksonville. And that means giving up probably 40 and 41 picks.
Right, and the reason that's good news for the Bills is if you have four quarterbacks go before the Bills, that's pushing all that other talent down, like receiver and other stuff. So hopefully that takes place for the Bills' sake tonight.
But even so, Jacksonville could drop down to 28, 29, or 30, I'm sorry, 40, 41, and take a wideout.
Yeah, they could, but they just signed Christian Kirk to gigantic money in free agency.
So you need rookie contracts.
Well, it was gigantic money at the beginning of free agency.
Right.
5 years, $72 million. I was like, for Christian Kirk? But now, heck, it doesn't look so ridiculous.
Whack,
doesn't look like a ridiculous contract. And they have other young players there. I know they lost DJ Chark, who I believe is in Detroit now. But, yeah, so there's a lot of intrigue with how the board falls tonight for sure, which is why we are asking you, what's your reaction to the Bills' first-round pick from last night, Kair Elam, and what's on your wish list for tonight? We've got callers on the line at 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550. There are a couple of open lines for you there as well. For those of you waiting, hang tight. We do have to take a break here, but we're right to the phone calls when we return. Here on One Bills Live, presented by Collider Health, it's Buffalo Bills Radio. All right, ladies and germs, as we get ready for night two, we remind you that for the second straight season, Tasker Damas has struck and told you what was going to happen on night one of the NFL draft. Here is Stephen A. Tasker on One Bills Live at approximately 2:50 p.m. on Thursday.
I think it's going to be Kaiir Elam.
Elam, okay.
Elite traits, and he can play in certain situations right off the bus.
That's all you need to know. That's why you listen to this show, people. This is why you listen to this show. Last year at this time, Tasker Damas said the Bills will take defensive end Greg Rousseau with the 30th pick. Do you know how hard it is to peg the 30th pick in a draft, or the 25th, or in this case, 23rd pick in the draft? Tasker Damas, 2 years running. Tune in next year at this time see if he makes it a trifecta.
Don't kid yourself, folks out there listening. I demanded that they play that. So, because I'm not right so often.
We would have played it anyway.
Not to celebrate
that is,
the fact.
That's rare. That far down the board to call it 2 years in a row. I just got a bravo to you, man.
Well.
Bravo to you. Tasker Damas. Maybe we should have a t-shirt made up of Tasker Damas.
Listen, the way it got there has nothing to do with me knowing anything. I mean,
come on. You got to
know Brandon. But it's not like we're playing golf and he's like spitting this stuff out to me. I mean, I don't know. But we talk about it all the time. And sometimes, I don't know, maybe I get an instant. Maybe I know. Here's the thing. I caught myself doing. I'm like, you know what? Let's not overthink this. Yeah. We got to get a guy.
Yep.
And that's really the only guy that there's a question mark about.
We both went with
that position, I mean.
We both went with a player with elite athletic traits. You went with Kaiir Elam. I went with Daxon Hill, who went a short time later.
Yeah.
You know, guys with speed. I think speed is a higher priority for the Bills with the people they're going to be drafting at the skill positions this year, both offense and defense. And we saw that last night with Kaiir Elam. But let's get to the phones at 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550. Your reaction to last night's round one pick and what you're hoping for tonight with rounds two and round three. We lead off today with John in Buffalo. What do you got for us, John?
Hey, guys. I'm trying to understand what happened last night.
Okay.
How do we allow Kansas City to jump 8 picks ahead of us and take the best cornerback on the board, and then we turn around and trade a 4th-round pick and move up 2 spots for no apparent reason? Dallas wasn't taking a cornerback, and neither was Baltimore. They wouldn't have traded it. Was Brandon and his staff sleeping, or what happened?
I understand the argument, because you're not the first person to say, why did they feel they needed to trade up? I think they wanted to ensure they got their guy. That's how Brandon explained it. They had one guy left with a round one draft grade.
And that was
Kaiir Elam.
There was always a chance that Dallas would have gotten him. And I don't know this, but it would.
They're not taking a corner.
If you saw Dallas's look when Buffalo picked Kaiir Elam, I don't know whether it was a result of that or what, but they looked like somebody stole their dog. But I don't know if they were even thinking about Kyrie.
I don't think they were thinking.
I think
corner.
The Bills didn't want to take that chance. Now, as far as letting the Chiefs jump ahead of them, I mean, the Bills couldn't jump up as high as the Chiefs could because the Chiefs had more draft capital. They had more draft picks than anybody else in the league except the Jets. So they could afford to jump higher than the Bills could.
Yeah, they made an 8 spot jump.
And the way the Bills' board fell, the last guy available that the Bills thought they could take and still be okay with in the first round – was Kaiir Elam. So they had no problem giving up a 4th-rounder and the 25th pick to jump up 2 spots. I don't have a problem with it because the guy can really go. The guy is an absolute stud.
I'll just pose this to John because he's already hopped off here. I'll just pose this to you, John. Would you rather have a general manager that's aggressive and make sure he gets the guy he feels they need for their team? Or would you rather have a guy sit and wait, miss out on the guy, and then how do you feel about today? Because if they don't get that guy, I'm telling you right now what Brandon Bean's doing. He's going the other way. He's trading out. So you'd be sitting here today without anybody.
And
so how would you feel if the Bills traded out of round one and don't have a cornerback? That's the question you have to ask yourself, John, and see which one you're happier with. Because they can't take that chance. Yes, we can say now that the Cowboys weren't going to draft a corner, and I'm pretty confident they would not have. Okay, they have other more pressing needs on their offensive line.
And Baltimore had already taken a safety.
So
maybe.
But I guess what the risk is some other team jumps up there because they have a similar board to the Bills, and they know that Kyer Elam is the only other first-round corner worth his salt. And they might leapfrog the Bills, knowing the Bills need a corner, do a trade with Dallas, take Kyer Elam off the board at 24, and now you're standing there with no dance partner.
It seems
at
like
25.
I had a conversation, too, where somebody thought that it was possible that somebody else was trying to do the exact same thing the Bills were doing, and the Bills had a better offer.
Yeah, and you don't know what intel the Bills
no
are getting
calling
around.
I have no idea if that's true or not. But here's the thing as well. You're not, and I get your point, John, like the Chiefs are doing this. And the Chiefs, listen, we're not playing the Chiefs today or yesterday. You're trying to get the best player you can get with the capital you have. So you can't worry about what other teams are doing in the draft unless they're trying to get to the same spot you are, the same guy you are. Let's face it, if the Chiefs wanted to jump higher than the Bills, and there's nothing the Bills can do about it.
Yeah.
And that's what the Chiefs did. They jumped from, what was it?
29 to 21.
29 to 21. The Bills would have to give up four picks to do that.
Not to mention the fact that the Patriots at 21 are not helping the Bills out to move up to their spot
right
at 21.
The
They're
Patriots,
just not doing it with them.
Yeah, the Patriots wouldn't trade the Bills for that. Or maybe they would have. I doubt it. But here you go. You're sitting there. But you're not, you know, just because the Chiefs are doing this and some Bills fans have their guts in a knot over anything that the Chiefs do because they've beaten us in the playoffs 2 years in a row, it doesn't matter what the Chiefs did. This is about us. This is about the Bills.
And don't,
you're trying to get the guys you need to make your team as good as it can be. Chiefs or not. So it doesn't matter who jumped up ahead of you because they're doing their thing and you can't control it. You may not even know about it until after the fact. So you got to do your thing, which is what the Bills did.
And I would say this too. Once they took Trent McDuffie, there's a genuine concern that a cornerback run is starting. And if you're at 25 and the cornerback run started at 21 – and you got one guy left on your board that's worth a first-round grade,
that's
a corner,
right,
you better get moving.
Yeah,
and that's what Brandon Bean did. And and he's not the only one that did that last night, because look at what happened at pick 10 or pick 11 or pick 10. Jets take Garrett Wilson, wide receiver. Two other teams traded up to within two picks of pick 10. Why? Because they thought a wide receiver run was starting and they wanted to be a part of it. New Orleans jumps up there. They take Chris Olave with the very next pick. Detroit trades up from 32, 20 spots to get Jameson Williams. So Brandon Bean is not alone in being aggressive when you sense a run is starting and you know you're not in a position to get the last guy that you think's worth the grade on the board.
Right.
So I'd rather have my general manager be aggressive and go get the guy he wants rather than sit and wait and hope.
Here's what you're looking at, too. You got a 23 pick instead of the 25 pick. Do we really care where they got it? If they got the right guy, who cares what pick they got it at? Now, what you do care about is the fourth rounder. Who's up there at the fourth rounder that we're all sitting there going, we're going to miss out on that guy?
Well, we'll see.
Right.
We'll
that
see.
Remains to be seen. We'll see. But if you got the guy that's going to – you're going to plug him in to the CB2 spot and – already there are other analysts around the high end of Kyer Elam is cornerback one. Plug him in. He's the guy. That's his top end. He is a like Trey White. And if you got that guy, nobody cares.
Yeah.
Nobody cares.
Let's go back to the phones and we go to Joanne in Buffalo next. What do you have for us, Joanne?
Hi, how are you?
Good.
What I want to know is I waited all night for that pick. I was so excited. And when they call his name, they didn't give him any accolades at all. They didn't show his picture.
Right.
They didn't show his family. And they just, like, blew Buffalo off.
I am totally
why that happened.
Joanne, I am totally on board with that. Kyer Elam, now, he was not in Vegas. Okay, some of the picks weren't. They didn't have a camera at his spot. They didn't have anything at his spot. We didn't hear from him. We didn't see highlights, nothing. I was like, hey, wait a minute.
Yeah.
I'm totally with you, Joanne.
Now, which feed were you watching? Were you watching ESPN or NFL Network?
NFL Network.
Okay. Maddie and I were getting to work when the pick was made, so I wasn't really paying attention to what the coverage was on Elam on the TV because we were going on set to do our live stream on the Bills YouTube channel after the pick was made with Greg Cosell and then Brandon Bean. That's surprising.
They didn't have a
it's
camera.
It's not like they don't have footage on. Well, they may not have had a camera at his house.
They didn't. They had.
They had footage and highlights.
They had like
though,
two.
Right?
They gave him like two, maybe two plays, highlights, and that was it. And they were like gone.
Now, I will say this. Sometimes, based on the television breaks, some of the draft picks in round one get less coverage than the others. And
right.
So I can't even recall whether they were coming back from break. Not to mention this.
Our MSGVers are watching Roger do it now. We're still talking. Go ahead.
I mean, they did make a trade up. That shouldn't catch the television network off guard. That happens all the time. Heck,
right.
It happened five times already.
Right.
The Bills were the sixth of nine trades in the round one. I don't know. I don't have an answer for you, Joanne. That's very interesting. I mean, they ran highlights of him and all of that stuff.
Yeah.
But
and they gave him a quick – the guys, the analysts, like they gave him a quick little say, hey, here's what this guy's all about, and they showed some highlights, and they were good highlights, as we've all seen. They talked about how he is a guy who is a lockdown corner, huge upside athletically, and everything you can say. So, yeah. Then that was it. We didn't get a live shot of him. I think that's what we were missing: a live shot of Kyir Elam.
Well, eventually we
wherever
saw
he was,
and we started the show with it today.
Yeah,
those
we did.
Of you that didn't catch it.
You need to go on. Actually, it's Florida Gators football. And go scroll down through their
on
timeline on social media, on Twitter, and they'll have the scene at Kyir's apartment, his house, or wherever it was. And it was, like we said, I mean, it brought tears to my eyes. It was awesome, absolutely awesome.
We have to take a break here. When we come back, more of your phone calls. What did you think of the round one pick, and what are you hoping for? What's on your wish list for tonight, rounds two and rounds three, getting started at 7 p.m. on NFL Network ESPN. So let us know. Got an open line for you at 803-0550. We're back in a second here on One Bills Live. All right, welcome back to One Bills Live. We wanted to pass along a thank you to Rachel's Mediterranean Grill for providing us with sustenance on what is a long 3 days for us here at One Bills Drive. Dropped off lunch for us today. That was huge.
Yeah, it was very
absolutely
nice.
Huge.
Yeah.
I am currently mowing down pita chips like a beaver
pita
on a tree.
Chips and hummus, oh, so good. Yeah, they had chicken wraps, steak wraps, big Greek salad. How good is that for lunch? Yeah. It's just great.
I would argue that pita chips are Greek food's answer to nachos. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Really good.
Yeah, you don't even need to put anything on them, although they gave us like a...
I'm burping through the entire segment.
What's up, Belchy?
I know, it's so bad, but I can't help it. I'm eating.
We're foodies, Steve, remember?
Well, after a night like we had last night, you're up late, you know.
I'm telling you, we're all short on sleep at this point, but the last thing I was thinking about getting ready for work today was what am I bringing for lunch? Because I'm usually a brown bag guy. Bag guy. So I'm always bringing my lunch. And today I was just like, I don't even want to think about it. And thankfully, I totally forgot coming in that Rachel's Mediterranean Grill was taking
Producer
care of
us.
So
Harris
thanks to them, proud sponsor of the Bills. So thanks to them for helping
Producer
us
Producer Jay Harris had given us the heads up yesterday. And like you, okay, cool, that'll be fine. And then you forget about it. It's like, we're all set.
So thanks to those guys.
Very nice.
Big help on what's a long weekend. Let's go back to the phones, though, and we go to Bob in Amherst next. What do you got for us, Bob?
Hello, gentlemen. I have two things. First of all, Brownie, tell me that you saw Sean McVay's interview.
Oh, we did.
We've got it.
We'll be playing that in the second hour of the show, along with Patriots fans and Patriots reporters' reactions to their pick of a guard that some people feel is not even
Tennessee,
a third-round selection.
Tennessee Chattanooga
guard
prospect.
Cole String. Yeah, so stay tuned for that, because we'll be racking that. You can mark my words.
We're going to be throwing that up because it is, for Bills fans,
it's delicious.
It is absolutely savory.
You love it. You love it when they're picking on New England and Buffalo's got no blood in.
Yeah.
Right. We've got no skin in the game. It's just them just commiserating.
Fumbling all over themselves.
Oh, my gosh. It was great. Yes. It is the sweet nectar of
what else you got, though,
Bills fans?
Okay. The other thing, I'm just thinking about it. In the beginning of the show, you were talking about how the quarterback and the edge rusher and the wide receiver are taking the bulk of the money. How soon before the colleges or the pros figure out that it's the cornerbacks now that have to cover these wide receivers, and when do they become the next people? You know, like Darrell Revis back in the day. I mean, you know, when do they become the – when do they get their money?
And, well, in – they already kind of are making that money, Bob. Not, I mean, their market didn't vault into the stratosphere the way the receiver market did this offseason. But if you recall, not too long ago, their money went up precipitously when the Carolina Panthers rescinded the franchise tag off of Josh Norman because they didn't want to pay him on a one-year deal and couldn't agree on a contract extension. They rescind the franchise tag. And Washington swoops in and signed him to a $15 million a year contract, which at that time was about $4 to $5 million higher than the highest paid guy in the league. So they turned the cornerback market on their ear about 6-7 years ago.
Right, and then it was Jalen Ramsey to the Rams,
yes.
And the, you know, and Steph Gilmore, and of course then it was Darrell Revis signing one-year deal. So they're up there, but it's never been more than maybe two or three, got one or two guys at a time.
Yeah.
Now you're right. I think you're right, Bob. There's going to be more and more guys making that. You know, even on the Bills, Trey is making 17.
Yeah,
and that's,
he's not making 30 though.
No, he's not. And I'll say this too: for the lower levels of football, it's harder to play DB, a corner, than it is play wide receiver because all the rules are against you.
Yeah.
And you're out there by yourself, and they can get a matchup that is unfavorable for you whenever they want it, just with shifts in motion. So it's hard to it's harder to play DB and wide receiver, and the reason I say that is because kids got to choose a spot.
So let me ask you this. We see this endless supply of receivers every year, which should conceivably help NFL clubs keep their costs down at the position because anytime someone becomes too cost prohibitive, you trade them and you draft another one. That's what Tennessee did last night.
That's right.
Traded A.J. Brown, drafted Treylon Burks. Come on down. But because of what you just said, the rules are slanted towards the offense
right.
In terms of how this game is officiated and played. I wonder if more GMs just say, well, who am I going to pay? The guy that it's easier for to succeed?
Right.
Or the guy that's harder for to succeed?
But
I think GMs will come down on both sides of that fence because on the one hand, you say, this guy's got a good chance to succeed. It's going to make me look like it's worth paying this guy money. But on the other hand, if I can find one of those corners that can still win despite the rules, I should pay that guy because they're hard to find.
Well, they're rare. Everybody's going to roll out three wides, and they're going to be pretty good ones because of the depth of the position around the league and the guys coming out in the draft.
Supply, yeah.
There's not that many corners. This draft alone, you got 12, 13 wideouts who are going to step on the field and contribute in a big way on the offensive side of the field. You got six of them in the first round?
No,
We just said it was like the
receivers.
Yes. Yeah, receivers.
Six in the first round, two moved via trade.
So six in the first round, there were only four corners before there was a precipitous drop-off. You know, and it's like
and watch tonight. You're going to watch three or four more receivers go in the
They're
top
rare.
Half of the round.
And I'll say what, if you're a young kid coming up to play, it's like, do you want to be the easy way and make a lot of money catch the ball and score touchdowns, or do you want to be a DB that's always in the back of the end zone going
checking for rain.
I just got beat. Sooner or later, they're all – I mean, all the great ones, Revis, it happened to Revis, it happened to Richard Sherman, it happens to Jalen Ramsey. All of them get smoked. None of young kids want it. I'd rather be the guy dancing in the end zone rather than the one walking back to the bench.
Yeah, doing the gritty or whatever. Yeah, I get it. We have to break here. When we come back, though, we'll be checking in with the one and only Greg Cosell from NFL Films. He will help us break down Kyir Elam and maybe even help us take a look at where the value might be in round two tonight in terms of who's still out there on the board. I know he's a big, big fan of a certain Georgia Bulldogs wide receiver. Talk to him about that as well. Coming up next on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health, it's Buffalo Bills Radio.
And it's Steve Tasker who has been all over the field.
Kind of unique. He was kind of a dual role player for you. Steve.
A balloon.
Steve. A blimp. We're not even in the stratosphere of normalcy here. All right, here we are. Hour number two after night one of the 2022 NFL Draft. Getting set for day two, night two, whatever you want to call it. But here to review night one with us and the Bills pick at 23 after trading up with the Baltimore Ravens is senior producer from NFL Films, Greg Cosell. And Greg, I know you were on with Manny and I last night on our draft stream after the pick was made. And we did not know it at the time, but now we do. You know, Steve and I were debating, do the Bills go for elite physical traits with a guy like Kaiir Elam? Or do they go with a scheme fit like Andrew Booth if both are on the board? Both were on the board. They went elite physical traits. So why do you think Booth slipped all the way out of the first round? I know it, you might not know what everybody's thinking there, but it's because he didn't time maybe? And there was no time on him, I saw.
No, there isn't because he got hurt.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny you asked me that, Chris, because I actually had done Booth earlier and then redid him and went back and watched some other stuff. So I really got a pretty detailed view of Booth, and I only finished that actually yesterday. And it's funny that you would ask me that because Booth, I thought, had some issues that I'm not saying will prevent him from being a good player. But I think that Elam overall has far more traits than Booth.
Yeah.
Booth had some concerns that showed up in multiple games. He was a little slow with his transitions. He almost seemed to have a segmented feel to his movement at times. There were other times he looked very good, but I thought that when he had to stop in off coverage and plant and react forward, he was a little sticky and segmented. It also showed up at times when he had to open his hips and turn and run with vertical routes. So I don't know if these are the reasons that he dropped out of the first round. I can only tell you from watching six full games of tape on Andrew Booth that I started to notice these things. And even though he's super competitive and does have man zone scheme versatility, I think there are some things that need to be worked through. And I think Elam overall was the better prospect.
And that's because of his high, because of his ceiling, right?
Well, Steve, to me, you know, you're dealing with a guy that's over 6'1". He's ran a really good 40. He has really high-level press man traits. That's his game. He's long. He's athletic. He did play some slot as well toward the end of this season. So theoretically, he could play in the slot. But he's got the profile that you really look for in an NFL corner. Size, length, athleticism, speed, competitiveness, ability to play press. Everybody just automatically assumes, of course, you guys don't, you're there, that, oh, the Bills, they just play zone. Well, that's been kind of less and less true over the last couple of years. Of course they play zone. But there was a sense, I think, with Leslie and Sean, you know, going back 3-4 years, that, oh, this is a zone team. They play a lot of man coverage. And more teams play man coverage for any number of different reasons. But Elam has great traits to play press man.
The one thing that I don't think we covered yesterday was he is a physical hitter. He likes to bring the wood on the hits. Now, he does miss at times, and Brandon Bean did even say that his tackling technique, that's an area where they're going to have to work with him on that. But I would say the biggest difference that I've seen with this franchise since McDermott and Bean came along is player development.
Yeah.
Players get here and then they get better. I can run down the list of examples. Matt Milano is probably one of the primary ones. But to me, that's something that I could think I could see them easily fixing in his game. For some reason, the Florida kids, they go for ankle tackles a lot out on the edges. And now, and by virtue of that, their head is down. And so that's why I think they miss as much as they do. I think once they correct that, he's got the physicality to really bring the wood, doesn't he?
Without question. And he's willing to do so. I mean, he challenges receivers. He is willing to tackle. I don't think there's any question about that. Those are technique issues which coaches always feel that they can correct. And you made a great point. I mean, you can even look at Taron Johnson and look where he is based on where he was drafted. So, yes, players do get better. And I think players in the secondary get better. I mean, look at what Levi Wallace, who's obviously not there anymore, but look what he accomplished. Was he even drafted or was he
undrafted?
A free agent?
Yeah, he was undrafted.
Yeah, that's what I thought. And here he was starting on the outside on a team that was close to a Super Bowl for, you know, a couple of years. So, I mean, you're right. And I think that's very true at the corner spot. And this guy does have high level traits. I remember a couple of days ago, someone asked me about corners that I thought were clear first round trait corners. And Elam was right there. I think Kair Elam is a first round traits corner. And you have to be able to play man coverage in the NFL. And he can do that. I even think that the zone portion, which we briefly touched upon last night, Chris, I think that's coachable as well.
Yeah.
Because that's understanding receiver splits. That's understanding route combinations that come from the different splits, whether you're to the field or to the boundary. That stuff's teachable. I'm not sure that the high level competitiveness is, and Steve, you could speak to this better than I, but you know, from playing a long time, you know, that high level competitiveness, that's a tough thing to teach if a guy doesn't have it.
Right. I mean, knowing where your help is on a coverage, knowing where your strengths are, where they're going to attack you, where the weakness of your defense is, that's all knowledge and repetition and film study. Attitude's a little bit more esoteric. I mean, I don't know how you can get a guy, even if you give him a good pep talk at the beginning of the game, you know, that's pretty good till the opening kickoff's done. And then you got a guy's got to play. So attitude is something you can't really – it's got to come from the kid, you know.
Right. So
the zone coverage, that's very – athletically, it's much easier to play than man coverage. It's about knowledge and understanding, and that is all learnable, no question about it. So I think that's why, you know, if you're going to get a guy, get somebody who is absolutely gifted to do the hard stuff and teach him the easy stuff.
Yeah, and I think your point's a great one, because I think it's much easier to teach what you said than to teach a guy how to be a really good man corner.
Right.
You know, I think, and he's a really good man corner right now. And sure, well, when you come into the league, do you have some issues because you're playing better players? Of course. We know that always happens. But he wants to play press man. He knows how to play press man. He's competitive with it. You can teach him zone principles. So I think this is, to me, given the way the draft played out, Chris, I thought this was a really, really good pick.
Yeah. And the one thing that I'm curious about, and I'm just curious for your thoughts on this, maybe not right out of the chute, but with what he brings to the field physically and athletically, as we have seen over the years, Leslie Frazier has tried just about everyone in covering Travis Kelce. Tre'Davious White, Matt Milano, Jordan Poyer, Micah Hyde. I mean, run down the list. They've tried everyone with very, very limited success. What do you think of him in time as a matchup option for Travis Kelce with his size and length?
That's a great point, because it seems that you're going to have to go through Kansas City to get to where you want to go.
And they play him again this year.
Dramatic. Yeah, I know. I guess we don't know what week. The schedule hasn't come out yet. But I'm even talking in the playoffs, assuming, you know, that all works out. You know, that's a great point, because teams have done that with corners matching up to Kelce, particularly if you have corners with length. And he has physicality to him. Now, obviously, a tight end like Kelsey's bigger than Elam, but Elam would not back down. He would try to get up in his face and play physically, because that's who he is. That's the way he plays. That's just built into his whole personality. So that's an interesting point. I wonder if that was thought of. I mean, look, the first thing you have to do is get through your division. I mean, you got to win your division first and foremost. So, but not that, look, guys who've been doing this for a long time never go into a season saying, oh, we got our division, no problem. You know, Steve, you know that. No one thinks like that. Every year is a different year. And, you know, one or two fluky things, one or two bad injuries, and all of a sudden, you know, a team that everybody predicts to be 14-3 can be 9-8, and, you know, just like that. You know how that works. But, you know, I think that he can probably line up against quality tight ends. I mean, I'm trying to think of the tight ends that they'll face even in their division. I guess Gesicki's gone, right? Where did he sign?
No, Gesicki got franchised, didn't he?
He got franchised.
Oh, did he?
Yeah, I think so.
Oh, okay. So he's still in Miami.
You got Jonnu Smith and Hunter Henry in New England.
Right. That's something to think about for sure.
Yeah. So you get this guy who's, you're right. I mean, he's gifted to play man coverage. It's in his attitude and all of that. You know, you got to be long. You got to be loose-hipped, confident. You got to be smart. You got to have speed and quick twitch as well. None of that stuff really is something you sit in a classroom and learn. It's all given. You know, you walk in the door with it. The rest of it, becoming a pro, it's all reps.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And I think in today's NFL, because look what you have. You have quicker drops now. You have RPOs. Miami's going to be an RPO team. There's going to be a lot of quick slants and glance routes. We know what New England's going to do. They do a lot of that as well because Mac Jones is their quarterback. So what's happened in the league, guys, is because there's quicker game throws, you don't get to the quarterback on those throws because the ball comes out too quick. So if you can't impact the quarterback, who do you have to impact? You have to impact the receivers. You have to disrupt the timing of the receivers because you're not going to impact the timing and disrupt the quarterback. Now, obviously, all that changes when it's 3rd and 9, but just in general, you know, normal down and distance situations, you have to really impact and disrupt receivers more so than the quarterback.
And Greg, I know you're more about grading the players in terms of what their skill set is, not necessarily to put them on a draft board. But tonight for round two, are there any I know one player that you're pretty excited about that's still on the board, George Pickens. But besides him, is there anybody else that you really liked in your film study that you're maybe even a little surprised is still out there on the board right now?
I mean, surprised, no, because I've done this too many times, to be truly surprised by it. But, I mean, there's players I really like. And, again, then it comes down to what the Bills could be looking for. I would still think they'd be looking for offensive linemen. Wouldn't you guys think so?
Yeah,
I mean, I know they upgraded that to some degree, but and they have a new coach in Aaron Cromer. But I would still think that offensive line would be an area that they would definitely be interested in. What number pick do they have in the second
it's
round?
57,
I believe.
Yeah, 57. And I'm with
you.
So,
I mean, obviously that's a ways down. So, but there's always players. But I would think offensive line would be an area that they might continue to look at. Is this a spot, Chris, where they could look for a running back? Because I still believe – I don't know if they're going to look for that bell cow back because I don't think their offense is built like that. But, you know, I still James Cook to me is fascinating.
Yeah.
I've really liked him. I think that he fits kind of the way the Bills play really, really well. See, I think Kenneth Walker is a bell cow. He's a volume back, and I don't think their offense is built on a volume back.
Well, yeah. If they have a guy that steps up and does it, I think we saw – in the last month of the season last year, Devin Singletary become kind of that bell cow back. He was in the game if they were on the field offensively.
Yep.
So if I think one reason they have not run their running backs that way is because up until this last month of this last season, they never had a guy do that to be who deserved it. I think if they had a guy like a Kenneth Walker III who stepped onto the field and was productive from the first snap all the way through and got better, I think they would become an offense like that, where they would have
really?
A guy where they would hand the ball. They wouldn't take him off the field.
I just don't know if they're going to give him.
That doesn't mean they're
going to
run the ball 30 times.
Which is why I like Greg, love James Cook, because here's a guy that knows how to rotate in, rotate out, and still remain in the flow of the game make plays.
My point is this: whether they give him the ball or not, he's the guy on the field.
Oh, okay.
Well, let me ask you this, Steve, just to go back to when you played, because it just struck me right now with the K-gun and that offense, which was obviously, you know, it was thought of as a passing offense. But yet Thurman Thomas, how many times he carried an awful lot, didn't he?
It was a 50-50 split.
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't think to me this offense now with Josh would not be looking for that. I don't think they'd be looking for that. I think they want more than they had through clearly most of last season, more like what they had down the stretch. But I don't think they're looking for a 50-50 split.
No, they're not looking for a 50-50 split. But what my point would just be this, more about snap counts, because they're running guys on and off the field constantly, whether they're handing them the ball or not, with pass protection and all that. And I think they would maybe not do that as much. Your bell cow guy would just be the guy that gets the most snaps. Devin Singletary, far and away, got more snaps than any other than Zach Moss or the other guy or Breida last year at the end of the season. Not that they're going to become a running offense by any stretch, or even include or up their percentage, but at least they've got one guy in there, and they become, because of a skill set, less predictable. Because when Moss is in there, they're going to use him to pass protect. When Devin Singletary's in there, they're going to hand it to him, or they're going to throw him out in the route. That kind
right.
of thing.
Right. Yeah. The reason I like Cook for this offense is the one thing Cook gives them, which really Singletary doesn't, and Moss certainly doesn't, is Cook can split out and run intermediate and vertical routes.
Right.
And that element, I think, would really help this offense. And, you know, I guess it depends on a receiver as well. They could take a receiver at 57, no problem at all. But Cook has vertical ability as a pass receiver. He happens to be a very good runner as well. He actually looks like his brother. He's just a little smaller, but he's got very good running ability, and he's a terrific pass receiver who has split out and made big plays running intermediate and vertical routes. Yeah. That would give them a dimension that they don't presently have.
I forgot about him, and this is the guy that every time it's his hair and the way he runs and the way he looks, his uniform, he looks like Alvin Kamara to me. Obviously everybody would love that.
I couldn't agree more. I think deployment-wise, you know, I don't want people to think we're saying he's absolutely Alvin Kamara right now, but deployment-wise, I think you can use him in a similar fashion.
I think that makes a lot of sense to me.
Yeah, I was pointing a lot of our listeners to the Tennessee game. Watch how they split him out in that game, in the red zone in particular. He's outside the numbers, and he's catching
fate. Oh, yeah, well, he I think 2 years in a row, if I'm not mistaken, he caught long passes against Alabama and Nick Saban's defense where he was split outside the numbers and he ran vertical routes. And he is a tough matchup because he, even out of the backfield, he can run wheel routes. He can run H-seam, the halfback seam routes. He gives you a dimension in the pass game that's different from Singletary and Moss for sure.
It's also different from Breece Hall because Breece Hall is not a polished route runner like James Cook is, in my opinion. I just don't think he's as advanced in that area of the game. He's got good hands, but if you need splitting him out wide, I think would be a very different conversation and a much bigger learning curve.
And the other factor with Cook too, Singletary, I wouldn't call him purely explosive even as a runner. Cook is explosive. If Cook gets to the third level, he could take it to the house.
One other guy that I wanted to run by you, and I don't know if you saw him or not, so I hate to put you on the spot. If you didn't see him, you didn't see him. I'm just thinking if they don't get a running back tonight, somebody later in the draft, the Arizona State kid, Rashad White, the running back. I don't know.
I saw him.
Yeah. What'd you think of him? Because I think he's a natural pass catcher as well. I mean,
I really like him too.
Yeah.
I think he fits the NFL game. I mean, I would see him as someone who would fit today's NFL.
Yeah.
And it would not surprise me if he becomes an excellent NFL player.
Yeah.
Because he's got good running traits, not special, but good. And plus he's 215 and he's a really, really good receiver. As you mentioned, he can line up both in the backfield. He can detach from the formation. He really has wide receiver traits as a receiver. So he's another guy, and I studied him closely, and I think he fits that as well, Chris. That's another player that could easily. And again, I never know where guys are going to go, but I think he fits just what you're talking about.
Well, let me say this then: is there we talk about positionless players defensively, guys that are hybrid linebackers, safeties. Safety linebackers or edge rushers, defensive ends, that kind of stuff. On offense, that's kind of the hybrid that guys are looking for now, a guy that can split out wide and beat you as a wide receiver, but then like a Deebo Samuel, line up in the backfield and take the handoff. It becomes a real matchup problem for a defense to set their defense, not knowing exactly what role that guy is in that play. Are there any other running backs other than the two guys we've just been talking about who are like that as a running back or wide receiver?
As running backs, I'm trying to look. I mean, Ty Chandler is somewhat like that coming out of North Carolina. He ran some vertical routes coming out of the backfield. He'd be a later round pick, I would think. I don't think he'd be a day two player. You know, I don't think they would view Brian Robinson this way, but he was a pretty good receiver at Alabama. I think Jerome Ford has that ability as well. I think Jerome Ford would be another guy that you could put in that category. Not quite at the same level as Cook and White, but I think he could fall into that category. You know, if he's sitting there in the fourth round, let's say, and you think, okay, we wanted to get a back in this draft, I think he can fit into that role. You know, to play off what you said, Steve, and I know we're probably running short on time, but to play off what you said, when you have an elite quarterback, you really want to be able, with your offense, from a formation perspective, a personnel perspective, you want to stress and challenge the defense both horizontally and vertically as much as you possibly can. And, you know, that's why I think teams like this, you know, Buffalo, Kansas City, they're not looking for bell cows. They're looking for guys who can do this kind of thing that we're talking about. Sure, you have to run the ball sometime, and you want to run it well when you do, no question. But I don't think they're looking for that kind of back where they say, okay, this guy needs to get it 18 to 22 times every week or our offense isn't going to work.
Yeah.
Right.
It's almost, it's almost as if the guy may carry the ball as much as he catches it in this offense.
You know, James Cook to me, and again, we're just talking about him because I like him. You know, I could see him being the kind of guy that gets 11 carries a week and also gets, you know, 8 or 9 targets a week.
Yeah.
He's that kind of player.
Yeah. Right. I agree with you. And he's really intriguing because I think, too, he's, for whatever, maybe not for us because we've been talking about him, but as a consensus, he's a step and a half behind the pure running backs like Breece Hall and Kenneth Walker III. But he's in some ways, for the pros, he's a much better fit.
Then, yeah, because then it becomes team and scheme specific, Steve. It depends what you're looking for.
Right.
You know, the Bills are not looking, in my view, hey, now watch, they'll draft Kenneth Walker and we'll all, you know, I'll look like an idiot. But, hey, to me, the Bills are not looking for a bell cow back,
right,
you know, that needs 20 carries in order to be effective.
Yeah.
Right. I agree.
All right, Greg, listen, enjoy night two of the draft. I know on the draft stream tonight, Manny and I will catch up with you after the Bills' second round pick, and then Steve and I will review the whole kit and caboodle with you next week. Thanks very much.
Looking forward to it. Thanks, guys. Thanks,
all right, Greg. That's Greg Cosell, senior producer from NFL Films, joining us and breaking down the Bills' first round pick. He's big on the RBs, man. he is big on the running backs. So, and I like James Cook a lot. I just happened to watch a lot of Georgia games this year, and him and his teammate, Zamir White, the other running back, they're both in this draft pool. Zamir White is more of the one-cut-and-go guy, not quite as shifty as Cook is. Cook can just do so many different things. I would say the only thing where you might wonder about his game a little bit is where a lot of running backs struggle a little bit, not struggle, but maybe aren't as advanced, is in the pass protection. And he's a little light in the pants. So how is he going to hold up in pass pro when he's got a 230-pound linebacker coming at him with a head of steam? That remains to be seen. But the diversity that he can give your offense from the running back position, it's impressive.
Here's the thing about a guy like James Cook. Yeah, he may not be able to pass protect, but the way he protects your quarterback is he gets open immediately.
By flaring
so
out.
So if he flares out, if that guy's not on him and the rush isn't free and clear right up the middle, the quarterback's got the ball out of his hand to James, you know, to James Cook, and he's gone. That's how he pass protects. He gives the quarterback a place to throw the football before he gets hit. And that's what offensive coordinator's job is. If you're going to – and this is what the K-gun was back in the day. It was a tight end – there, and they had 5 pass pros, and the tight end and the back would both release. You had to cover both those guys right away, or one of them was going to be open, and the ball was gone. You couldn't get home, even with only 5 offensive linemen rushing or protecting. So even if you had a stud
pass rusher, if he wins, if you can double him every time he goes someplace, if somebody else wins, you got a running back who turned out to be a Hall of Famer and a great tight end. One of them's going to be an option. It's going to go bink right to him, and away you go. You lose. So that's why pass pro as a running back, yes, it's one thing if it's a third and, you know, third and 15. Yeah, you might keep a tight end in and a running back in to pass protect because you got to wait for the routes to get down the field. But other than that, on down regular down and distance, when you're on schedule, that pass pro is a secondary consideration for a running back.
James Cook, for those that are wondering, 4.42 40 time, 10-yard split, 1.54. That's explosive.
All right, listen. That's my guy tonight.
You can't take my guy.
I'm taking him. You didn't take him?
That was my guy.
You didn't say you were going to take him? You didn't?
I didn't say I was taking him tonight. He's my guy. I've had my eye on him for like a month. Oh,
yeah, you're saying that now. Of course, so am I. But no, he's. I like that. I like him. I like him and his skill set better than I like the other two. Brees Hall and
he might be
Kenneth
there in
Walker.
Round three. I just don't think he's going to be there at 89.
No,
you may have
take
to
him now.
Up.
Take him now. You'll get it because listen, there's like eight offensive tackles still on the board. There's a bunch of defensive. There's a bunch of guys with some traits still on the board at those other spots.
And I don't think I don't think the wide receiver value is going to be there.
See, that's the thing with me. This guy gives you real value on the field. I mean, I think Ken Dorsey could carve out a role for a guy like James.
Oh, it wouldn't be hard,
right? For like James Cook. Like, I mean, just look at what the Saints do with Kamara. That guy's unbelievable.
Yeah. Because Kamara's put together a little bit better than Cook, but still, yeah, I get what you're saying.
I think that's the guy.
All right, we got to take a break here. When we come back, we'll get an update on Kyle Brandt's cross-country travel in an effort to get to night two of the draft where he's announcing the Bills' third-round pick at the lectern. So we'll check in on that. And we'll also bring you the sad, sad situation of the New England Patriots fans' reaction to their first-round pick of a guard that some other teams had as a third-round player. You don't want to miss it. We have it for you next here on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio. All right, welcome back to One Bills Live. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you as we wait for day two of the NFL draft to begin. And part of night two's festivities as it pertains to the Bills picks involves Good Morning Football's Kyle Brandt. As he broke the news here on our show on Monday, he has been asked to announce the Bills' round three selection at pick 89 tonight. The problem was he still had to do Good Morning Football in New York this morning and then head to the Newark Airport in New Jersey right after the show for a noon flight. And he is currently airborne, as we understand it, but he's providing a social media update on his progress as he madly makes his way across the country to get to the lectern in time to make the Bills or announce the Bills pick at 89. So here is Kyle Brandt.
New York City at 11 o'clock in 25 minutes. I will leave this set in this building. By car, I will travel to the Garden State of Newark, a Newark airport, in which I have a flight that is currently on time. 5.5-hour flight to arrive in Las Vegas, touch down, go directly to the draft theater at the Bellagio Fountains, at which point, God willing, I will be able to make the 89th pick.
Okay.
There is a very, very realistic possibility that I am not there in time. That's the whole schedule, okay? Adams, what jumps out to you about that schedule?
I'm trying to look here. I mean, Newark seems like it'll be fine for you. What's sticking out to you that's really, really not good? I mean, when you get to Vegas, if you have a car waiting there, you might get to that Bellagio stage. You might need some help, though, from fans. If people see Kyle Brandt along the way, help him, give him provisions, snacks. It doesn't sound like you're going to have any pretzels or anything at your disposal. They might make you, like, load the luggage yourself.
I might need to do that. Speaking of that, I may also need to pay $25 on this flight to use the seat back, which I'll be more than willing to do. A couple scenarios here.
If the Bills decide to move up in the third round from 89 to, say, 79, I will not be there in time for the pick.
Nope.
If the flight is delayed at all, I will not be there on time for the pick.
Yeah.
It is high-stakes, perilous travel, of which I will finish this show and then go. And I will say, I did the research. Brandon Bean, the three straight years in a row, he has not moved from his third-round pick. So if you stick at 89, I can get there. I can bring the house down for you. I just need you to help me. Don't move up too far. It's 87, sure, I can get there.
So that's where it's at. And last we heard, he was in flight, en route to Las Vegas. So the plane took off. It looks like he's on time. He's got his T-shirt all ready for the flight. It's the Josh Allen flex photo from just the other day in the Bills weight room. He's already got it ironed on to a T-shirt. So suffice it to say, he's amped and ready to roll. And we would expect nothing less.
That's exactly right. And I've been there, though, where you're trying to you got a meeting you got to get to, in the flights. And
we've all been there.
Everybody's got a horror story of travel. This is one that, think about it. It's not just, he's got, like, now it's like a public meeting he's got to go to, and if he's not
perilous
on time. If he's not on time, you better hope you're not the airline that is the cause of it.
Perilous was a good word.
Yes.
That Kyle used there.
Yes.
On the other end of the spectrum, there was a certain draft choice last night that not only elicited head scratching, but outright laughter from another NFL team. The New England Patriots, who traded out of their pick at 21 and moved back to pick 29 in the trade with Kansas City, went with University of Tennessee Chattanooga guard Cole Strange. And after this pick was announced, while L.A. Rams GM Les Snead and head coach Sean McVay were addressing the Los Angeles media, they did not have a pick, but they were made available to the media out there, while Kansas City or New England's pick was announced at pick 29. Here is the reaction of Les Snead and Sean McVay to New England's pick of guard Cole Strange.
Really,
Cole Strange
really?
Just went.
Oh, my. Wow. UT Chattanooga to the first round.
That?
Hey, where is...
How about that? And we wasted our time watching him thinking he'd be at 104,
hey,
maybe.
They didn't...
An unabashed Sean McVay... with the mic drop comment, we thought he'd be there at 104, which is, I think, one of their first picks. Holy mackerel. Like, talk about a mic drop on Bill Belichick.
And listen, the first thing out of it, the GM, and what's it, the GM's name? What is it?
Les Snead.
Les Snead's sitting there, and he goes, for real? For real? He goes, Tennessee Chattanooga to the first. He couldn't believe it. He couldn't believe it.
Well, he's not the only one.
And
it
was genuine dismay. It wasn't like they were rubbing the face of it. They were like,
they were just like, wow.
Oh, my God.
Like, there were more wrinkles on their forehead than mine. because I have a big forehead. Anyway, they're not the only ones that were in disbelief.
Oh, man.
Steve, we're going to New England now, where we will get the reaction from the analysts that cover the team, as well as some select fans and their reaction to the first round choice of UT Chattanooga guard Cole Strange.
Is Cole Strange going to be the Patriots pick in the first round?
Is it Cole Strange? Hang on. Okay, Albert, we're going to hold on.
Yep. Boy. Oh, boy.
Don't do it for me.
I don't know what to say.
Cole Strange from Chattanooga is an interior offensive lineman who was projected as a third round pick in a lot of places. I can't believe this pick.
Again, Patriots fans, it's draft night and we've taken another player that none of us have ever even heard about.
I don't think you'd be able to find anywhere on the internet a single first round mock draft that had Cole Strange going in the first round.
You still have a defense that did not force the Buffalo Bills to punt in either of the final two games that hasn't gotten any better.
They did it to us,
Evan. In my mind, it's a fourth round pick.
Strange decision. Yes, Mike?
Well, I mean, I have no faith that they did the right thing. I've lost faith in the team and the decision making.
And that's where we are.
Lap it up, is that, Bills fans.
I mean, just get a big old ladle.
Oh, man.
Just get a big old ladle. Stick it in this pot of the New England Patriots messages. Lap it up. All over your face. Just rub it all over.
Just love it.
Oh, my God. It's so delicious.
So, so tasty. The lamenting of the Patriot fans. And yeah. They're just like Buffalo. They got the studio set up just like us here. They got the studio setups. They got the analysts sitting there, and all of them are absolutely crushed.
My favorite part of the whole video there, for our radio listeners who could not watch it, there are three Patriots fans all in jerseys staring at the television on the camera.
And it's like the camera is the camera is looking out of the TV screen at three fans, looking right back at it. As they watch the announcement.
They don't say a single thing. And the best part is their wives and significant others are heard in the background laughing.
Just.
Out loud.
Absolutely
at their
laughing.
Disappointment. It is the tastiest thing since Bill Belichick slammed the phone on the sidelines on the Monday night game in 2020. That's how delicious that minute of video was for me. I hope you enjoyed it as well. And as I told Steve, if you're familiar with the Netflix show Stranger Things, the Patriots are living in the upside down right now because it has completely flipped for them. They are on the bottom looking up, and they don't know what the hell they're doing in the draft.
Oh, my gosh. They drafted a kid that really literally would have been there at 100. He would have been there at the pick 100, at least.
When the Rams were on the clock.
Right. And they picked him in the first round.
Love it. Love it, love it. We thought that would be something that you would enjoy as well. If you didn't get a chance to watch it because you're listening on the radio, pull it up on your phone. It is worth watching. It'll just bring a smile to your face and make your day even better. Bill's got a corner, addressed a need, and the Patriots still don't know what they're doing in the draft. It doesn't get any better than that. We have to take a break. Steve and I with one more segment to go. Stay tuned. We'll be back in a moment here on One Deals Live. Just to take the Patriots pick a step further, guard Cole Strange going 29th overall when some people, including draft analysts, felt he was a third-round prospect. The Patriots basically had to fill a hole that they created themselves. They traded away starting guard Shaq Mason this offseason and then had to plug that hole with their first-round pick, who many people feel is a third-round prospect. Yeah! Have fun with that. We did have word that Bill's first-round pick, Kyir Elam, is on site here at One Bill's Drive.
Yeah.
One of our team photographer, Bill Whippert, snapped some shots at the airport after he landed.
And he looks good.
Looks sharp. Got like a light blue plaid look with the blazer there.
Trim cut. Yeah, he looks good. Huh? Awesome. There was also a picture we had of him and Tredavious White also that they met for the first time. I guess it's for the first time. Good stuff.
He will be addressing the media later this afternoon. I believe 5:30 is when he's supposed to address the media. So we'll have that covered on BuffaloBills.com for you. And Maddie and I will be doing the draft stream again tonight. There's Kyir Elam with Trey White. And I believe that's one of Kyir's relatives with them, the young kid in the middle.
The Bills hat.
It's got the pom-pom hat on. But Maddie and I will be covering the draft tonight. So after the Bills pick in the second round, Maddie and I will be on the draft stream, which is on the Bills YouTube channel, also on Twitter, and also on the Bills Facebook page. And we'll have Greg Cosell with us for the second round pick, and then Maddie and I will come back and do the third round pick as well to wrap up night two. And then Steve and I are back on Monday to recap the whole shebang.
Thanks for being with us. It's going to be a great weekend, everybody. A lot of fun stuff. New members of the family on the way this weekend. Here we go.
That's right. We'll have it covered for you wall to wall on BuffaloBills.com as well. We will see you on Monday at 1 p.m. to recap it all.